This season of The Next Step is made possible by a grant from Gatto and Laura Artinian of Sydney, Australia, in memory of George Samarjan, and by listeners like you. Donate at epostle.net.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazgen, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast, well, that looks at the fabric of our being, looks at all dimensions of life by connecting dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual, looking at life through, well, one of the most ancient forms of all Christianity, Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. That polished look is the Armodox look, and we're inviting you to take a step with us and take a look with us. This podcast is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. If you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Well, hello, and how are you? What a beautiful day today is in Southern California. I hope it's the same wherever you are. I imagine there's some weather changes here and there, but wherever you may be, whether you're taking a fast step with us, a next step, a first step, a baby step, a crawling with us, just welcome. I am recording with some new equipment, so we're hoping that everything's going to work out good today. We had a few hiccups over the past few weeks. We were broadcasting from Armenia as well, but today we are back in the Glendale studio. So let me get started by first and foremost acknowledging all the wonderful comments we got over the past couple weeks, and to answer a few questions. Yes, the chi, what was that? XI. Well, let me explain. I guess I didn't do a good explanation of that last week, okay? Chi, that is a derivative of the word inchu. Inchu means why in Armenian, and inchu, of course, becomes inchi. And inchi becomes chi. It's just a fast way of saying it. And it is, yes, it is slang, definitely slang. But we had fun with that word. So that's the explanation of that XI that you see. I guess since we have like 38 letters in the Armenian alphabet, there's some sounds that you don't get otherwise. So how do you make up those sounds? So ingenious as they are on the internet, they use the Latin characters, basically the English alphabet, to come up with some of these sounds. Now you've got the KH, which would be, okay, so that would be your the start of the chi. But I guess the X seems to substitute very nicely, because very few words begin with X, and usually you can get away with it by doing a Z. So they use the X to come up with that that guttural sound. So XI is the chi sound, inchi or inchu or Y. Okay, so that explains that Y. Now, the other question you had was on the song that I played last week. Hoy nazanim yara. Yes, it is Ugomida Svartabed song. Yes. I forgot to mention that. Yes, you're absolutely right. It is a Ugomida Svartabed song written by him. And of course, it was adapted to modern jazz. And that's what we do over here. We adapt. We adapt things, right? Nothing wrong with that, is there? It's kind of like evolving. And that's where we start off today. We're going to talk about evolution, but in a good way. You know, I think people get scared of the word evolution. What's wrong with that word? It kind of just means that you're alive, right? You're evolving. And there's nothing wrong with that. Actually, this past week, I had a really interesting awakening because I was preparing for my Sunday sermon. And I found this poem that I had read back in the 1970s when I was a seminarian at Holy Etchmiadzin. I had left my family. It was my first time away from home. And you got to remember that going to Etchmiadzin in a communist country back in the 1970s during it was the darkest days of the Cold War, but the Cold War was still in effect. And basically there was tension between East and West, between the Soviets and the democracy of America. And here was an American student going to a communist country, into the Soviet Union, and basically cut off from all life on the outside. That's what it was like back in 1977. And you know, just to get a simple letter sent home took about a month. Just literally a month. I remember we'd go to the post office and you'd write longhand. Yeah, no such thing as computers. No such thing as word processors. No email. We did it what was called, well, in the ancient days, right? Snail mail. Actually, it was pretty effective because I think they delivered it to each house, right? And it used to come very nicely. We still get mail. We still have mail today. But it's not, you know, it's not as aesthetically pleasing as it was before. You used to do some fun things. You'd write on the envelopes. You'd seal those envelopes. Sometimes you'd smack it with a kiss, whatever it may be. But we used to take these cool envelopes that they had in Armenia. It said, I think it said Paravion on the top by email. I don't know why French had was the dominant international language. I don't know why, but it did. I do remember this little block in red. It said Paravion by plane, by airmail. Okay, so we would write our letters longhand. And we would take it over across the street from Etchmiadzin. There was what was called the post. Yes, you guessed it. It was the post office. And behind the counter was Digin Greta. Oh, Digin Greta. Yes. She was everything that her name Digin Greta. She was a big lady with those cool arms, you know, that just had muscles in them. And she had this really cool stamp in her hand, okay? So you would put the stamps on the envelope. And then she'd have this big, like, it was like a mallet, okay? And she would, like, she would stamp the stamp, okay, with ink. Like, in other words, cancel the stamp. And as her hand went down, the whole counter would shake, as would her body. And then she would smile at you with her beautiful gold tooth, you know, and take whatever change it was to purchase the stamp. Digin Greta. Now, once you put that mail in motion, you don't know what happens to it. Well, they were received in America about a month later. And of course, the American counterpart to that was sent to us. And sometimes my mom, in you know, just being a mom, she would send me some cool stuff, little things. Well, they would never get to me. I remember specifically coffee. You couldn't find coffee back in those days. You would find it, and it was interesting because you would have to go to some certain stores that would have the coffee. And what you would do is you'd order a kilo or a half a kilo, whatever it was, and you'd never get that amount. This was called papak. This was called the small little bribe, okay? So if you ordered a half a kilo, they would give you a little short of that half a kilo of coffee, and he would keep it for himself. And it was just accepted. It wasn't like a bad thing. It was just accepted because you knew that that was his little portion. Because everything went to the government, went to the Soviet state. So that person would get a small little amount of that. And over the course of the day, it would amount to, say, another kilo. He would sell that kilo on the market. And that would be his income. It would be his small little extra that he would make and contribute to the family pot. And this was very accepted, Popok. It was very, very accepted. In fact, everybody at that time was a taxi driver, if I remember right. You could just stop any car on the street. It's funny now. You could stop any car on the street and it becomes a taxi. Yeah, what are you thinking? That Uber just thought of this? Uber, you're out. You were predated by about 40, 50 years. Yeah, they were doing this anyway, okay? You would stop any car. And I'll never forget one morning I was in Yerevan. I had spent the night at my cousin's. And I had to get to Etchmiadzin early because the services would start at 7 o'clock. So I had to get into the monastery, get my black robe on, and get into the church by 7 o'clock. So this is like 6 o'clock. It was the dead of winter, and I just, like, you know, it's pretty dark outside, and I just, like, stopped somebody, okay? And this guy stopped, and he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to take me to the bridge over by St. Sarkis Street." There was St. Sarkis Church. There was a bridge, and from there would be a bus that would go to Etchmiadzin. So basically, you could stop any car in Yerevan, and they would take you to a certain location that you wanted inside the city. That was probably expected, and I forgot how many kopecks it was. It was a few cents, basically, to get around. So I stopped this car in the dead of night, right? It's like 6:30, 6 in the morning, and it's just so dark. It's winter. And I get into the car, and he says, "Where are you going?" I said, "Take me to the St. Sarkis Church, to the bridge over there, and I'm going to take the bus from there." He says, "Okay." Now we're driving, and I'm noticing a lot of action by his feet. Or I should say foot. Because I looked over and this poor man had only one foot. Now you got to remember that cars, especially in those days, there's no such thing as automatic transmission. This man was doing gas, clutch, brake, all with one foot. Yeah, that was what we call medifet. That was like pretty cool. I don't know. I got scared, of course. I didn't know if we were going to make it. But he just knew how to manage. Now, you think about that, okay? Think about clutching and gassing at the same time. You know what an art and skill that is, to let go of the clutch while you're accelerating on the gas. I don't know how he did it, but he got me to my location. I gave him my few kopecks, and I was on my way. So, anyway, to the bottom line of this. I was basically on the other side of the world, estranged from my family. I mean, there was no way of communicating. I'm sitting in a cab with one-legged man who's doing clutch, gas, and brake. And, you know, in Etchmiadzin, we were going through the lessons, and I found this beautiful poem by Avedik Isahakyan. And it was Mighty Geese. And it was one of the first poems that I read because I was learning Armenian while I was there, learning to read and write. And it was one of the first poems that I read, and it was just beautiful. It was about mighty geese to my mother. And of course, it conjures up all kinds of emotions within you, especially when you're estranged, when you're so far away and you have such an attachment to your family. And it said, "Mighty geese," and it starts off, "Hayrenikis heratselem chejbantuchnem." I am away from my homeland, and I am a pilgrim. I desire to be near my mother, next to my mother, and so on. And you know, it was just like this very emotional poem. And I remember reading it at that time. And you know, you conjure up these images of mom and apple pie and all the good stuff that comes with motherhood, right? Well, this week, as I was preparing my sermon, I had a chance to, you know, put together a few thoughts. And that poem just came into my head. And I revisited it. And it's interesting. 40 years later, it occurred to me that this poem that I thought was written to your mother was written to a bigger mother, right? To the homeland. written to those national aspirations. And no matter how you look at it, as a child, you may look at it and think of your mother. And as a grown adult, you look at it and you realize that there is some bigger motherhood, quote unquote. Okay, and that motherhood connects you to a land, connects you to a culture, to a tradition. And that too is motherhood. You have changed. The poem hasn't changed, but you have changed. And I think this is really important point that we need to understand, that it's okay to change. We get so wound up on words. Evolution. Yes, evolution does exist. You evolve. You're not the same as you were when you were a child. Remember St. Paul's words. I mean, it's so clear over there, right? He talks about love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I mean, you Google 1 Corinthians and 13 comes up right away. It is the most quoted chapter of all. It talks about love. Well, continue reading that. He talks about love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, it does not boast, love never ends. And then St. Paul goes into a talk about evolution. He said, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought it like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put away those childish thoughts. I put the ways of childhood behind me, for now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I fully am fully known. Wow, talk about evolution, there it is. And that's all evolution means. It means you're evolving, you're not dead, you're not decaying. Yeah, when you die, you're going to change too, okay? You're just going to decay. Okay, that's a body decaying. But as a spirit, you're constantly in this evolving process. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing that I saw that poem and I realized that, hey, it's not about my mom, it's about a bigger mom. It's about connections to a tradition, connections to a past, connections to a soil, to earth, to a bigger mother. And that's not a negative thing. That just means that I'm seeing things differently. And it's okay to do that. I'm saying this because a lot of times I just hear this conversation. You hear words, and these are buzzwords that trigger you into these negative realities when you don't need to go into those negative realities. Have we evolved as a species? Yes, we have. There are so many physical changes that humankind has gone through. But in the same way, our spirits have evolved. We start looking at life differently. And as Christians, the Christian message has not changed, but we have changed. We're not the same people that we were back in 2,000 years ago, living with Christ. Certainly society has changed. And when you think about possessions, human beings used to be possessions, whether through slavery or through marriage. Yes, let's talk about women. Women, we talk about sometimes, I shared with you a couple weeks ago, we were in Yerevan, and we were at a domestic violence walk, and somebody came up and said, you know, in the Bible it says that women shall be subservient, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it is blah, 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 blah. Because you fail to understand that that Bible is talking about a truth that's greater than you. It's not about your reading some words and saying, oh, there it is. St. Paul said that women shall be subservient to men. Okay, that's it. It's a truth. No, understand the context in which it was written. You talk about Jesus feeding the 5,000. What is it saying? Does not include the women and the children. Of course not. They didn't count. And you say, well, what a backward society. Hey, guess what? Here in the United States of America, it hasn't even been 100 years. I believe it was 1919 or 1920, that women were allowed to vote. Yeah, they didn't count. It was 1920. It hasn't even been 100 years that women have been given the right to vote. Okay, I'm not picking on people. I'm just saying that we've evolved. We've changed. The roles have changed. People have changed. We have changed. And when you recognize that, and this is the important point, It's not to say good or bad about the evolutionary process. It's when you recognize that we are in a flow, that things are changing, then you start understanding your place within all of life, how those changes affect you, how you interpret those changes, and in that interpretation, how you get along in your life. Let's take a break right now. We're going to listen to the song of the day today, and I'll be back in a few minutes to share some thoughts about what's going on today.
Shabbat, or the dance of our Shabbat.
And that is from Franz Bedoyan. Yes, the same one we played last week, the same artist. I had so many requests for it. I'm glad you liked it, but you know what? We do put the link on our show notes and do check out all of his music, purchase his albums. You know, this is a good way of supporting these artists that we feature here on The Next Step. Okay, so why Vahar Shabbat? What is Vahar Shabbat Ibad, or the dance of Vahar Shabbat? Vahar Shabbat happened to be the name of the city in which Etchmiadzin happened. Etchmiadzin, the word itself, is a descriptor of an event. Yeah, that's all. It's not a place. Etchmiadzin is a descriptor of an event. Or as Karakin I of blessed memory said, yes, the Catholicos before the one we have right now, Karakin I, who had a very short run as Catholicos of all Armenians in the late 1990s, he said Etchmiadzin is mission. That's very important. Etchmiadzin is mission. Very important statement made by Catholicoi of the Armenian Church. Why? Because it points to something beyond the words and beyond the history. Etchmiadzin itself is a descriptor of an event that happened. It took place in 301 as St. Gregory was removed from the pit, the Chorvirab, this deep pit. He came out and he saw this vision where Christ came down and pointed and hammered the golden nails, the golden hammer, right into four corners. He says, this is where you will build the church of the Armenian people. And the word Etchmiadzin literally means the descent of the only begotten. Christ coming down from heaven and pointing to where the church should be. Now today, that structure called Etchmiadzin, the mother cathedral, is actually called St. Mary's, Surpa Asfazadzin. Very few people know the name of that cathedral. But the more common name for it is Etchmiadzin. You say, we're going to Etchmiadzin. It happens to exist inside of a city called Vahar Shabbat. That's the name of that city. But again, you talk to people and say, I'm going to Vahar Shabbat. They look at you like, what? You're going to some other dimension? You're going to some other time period? No, you're going to a specific city. And I believe even, I'm not sure, you could check this out. I believe if you do Google Maps, Vahar Shabbat shows up. It is where Etchmiadzin is. The cathedral at Etchmiadzin is right there. At Vahar Shabbat is right there, and that's called Etchmiadzin. Inside of that Vahar Shabbat town, you will find a few different churches. But like I said, commonly we call it Etchmiadzin. Now, what is this? This is also an evolutionary process, right? We have evolved. We find it easier to refer to these places by their common names. We have evolved where we don't want to look at some of the more difficult pronunciations or the ancient traditions. And usually history has a way of wiping out a lot of stuff. And people, the historians, come back in and they say, well, wait, look, here's a word, here's a name. And so it's the historians who really kind of keep us focused and say, wait a minute, there's some history to it. But what good is that? What good is that? Hey, look, just this past week, Pope Francis was in Istanbul. He's going to be meeting with the Ecumenical Patriarch. I don't even know if that took place yet, or maybe it's today or tomorrow. But interestingly enough, he's in Istanbul, Hagia Sophia. Okay, this is the shrine of the Christian community, which is now a Muslim mosque. Okay, and that's life. So you refer to it and you look at it as Hagia Sophia, but you understand that within it there's a different group of people worshiping. Still a sacred space, right? Beginning of our show, Susie mentions that this series of broadcasts are being inspired by a pilgrimage that we took to ancient Armenia. Yes, we went through the ruins of Ani, through many ruins, and one of the hardest places that I had was in the city of Gars. In the city of Gars, there's an Armenian church with the Armenian traditional dome. I mean, that is basically trademark. You know that that's an Armenian church when you see that dome. But it has been converted to a mosque. It was one of the hardest places. In fact, I could not walk into that shrine. And perhaps my own prejudices, my own emotions, they took the better of me. I should have walked in. I wanted to see what it was, but I just couldn't. You know, I couldn't. It had been changed. It had evolved into a mosque. Good or bad, evolution takes place, right? And things do change. Istanbul used to be Constantinople. You can't call it Constantinople. They'll say, what map are you on? Where does Google find Constantinople? You know, life has gone forward. Google is here, and it's here for right now. It's not here to stay. It's not forever, but it is what defines these areas. And so you put in Constantinople, and it might steer you in some direction and eventually get you to Istanbul once you do the research, but it's not Constantinople.
Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, now Constantinople, been a long time gone. Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, now Constantinople, so if you've a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say. People just liked it better that way. So take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
Yeah, it's good to have you in the same room, Ken. You always find these nice ones. Yeah, well, it's true. It's nobody's business but the Turks. It is our business. But what are you going to do about it? Here is the ultimate question. What are you going to do about it? And so when we talk about this evolutionary process, it's important to remember that some of it you win, some of it you lose, and you need to be able to adapt. Life is changing, and there are so many factors involved. I mentioned earlier about His Holiness Karakin I of blessed memory, who talked about the mission, Etchmiadzin being mission. And I want to come back to this, because part of that evolution that I experienced this week had to do with the mission. I was getting ready for the sermon, and the passage, the lectionary reading for that day was from Luke chapter 4. It happens to be a very special one for me, because it was 32 years ago on that Sunday that I celebrated my first divine liturgy, and that was the reading. I don't think it was by coincidence. I do know that there was some hand of God in there, because it has really set me on the path and the career that I believe that the Armenian Church should be in. In fact, so much so that it's interestingly enough that every priest who gets ordained, this is the particular reading that is read at his ordination. I was going to say his or her ordination. Yeah, that's just me. That's just the feminist side of me coming out in there. But yeah, so far there's no hers involved. So at his ordination, this would happen. Okay, this would be read. And it comes to us from Luke chapter 4, in which Jesus proclaims his mission. And now this mission is the same mission that we have as priests, that we have as Christians. And it's very important to realize that the mission has not changed, but we change. And so we need to be able to adapt to that in with the particulars that we have, with the society, with the changes that we've experienced. Are we a parent right now? Are we a child right now? Do we have grandchildren? Do we have relationships that have gone sour? Do we have difficulties in our lives? So how do we see that mission? In Luke chapter 4, we read that Jesus, and this is the passage I'm referring to, moved by the Holy Spirit, he comes after his baptism, after his 40 days of seclusion. Now, is he the same person? Absolutely. Don't get into me about Christological debates and stuff like that. Yes, he always was the same person, but there is an evolutionary process. He has now been transformed because he's gone through something. He has gone through this process of 40 days of seclusion. He didn't just do it because it had to be done. He does it because he knows he has to do it. He has to go through this. And it is part of his evolutionary process. And he comes there into the temple and he reads, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And he closes the book and he says, in your hearing of this, this has been completed. Today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing, he says. Now think about that for a moment, okay? The scripture is there. The mission is the same. It's the same mission that we have until today. Because, what's the word, the legal phrase? Ipso facto, right? Ipso facto. If it's Jesus' mission, it has to be the mission of the Holy Church. And so this becomes our mission. But we understand it differently because of our times, because of who we are. Just as the young man who understood that poem to mean about his mother now understands it to mean about something greater, so too. We understand that the blind are not people who just don't have eyeballs in their socket, but these are people that cannot see even though they have eyes. They're not able to see the beauty of life. And lo and behold, that pertains to each and every one of us. All of us are blind and needing that healing of sight from Christ. And so hence, we talk about mission as being something that is Christ, something that is ours, something that begins with Christ. And for us to plug into that means that we have to feel comfortable with who we are as Christians. How we understand ourselves interacting in this world with the power of Christ. I said this last Sunday, and some people got a little bit bent out of shape. You know, when we talk about being an apostolic church, what are we talking about? This is what armadoxy is all about. It's not about words in a Bible, but about an experience that's holistic. Yes, the words of the Bible are there, but that's not the end of it all. Christ is bigger than the Bible. Christ is what you need to be powered with. And that Christian message comes to us from Christ. The word Christian, right? Children of Christ. And we are Christ's. And Christ is within us. Catechin I of blessed memory, he wrote this beautiful piece about mission. And I want to share this with you right now. Because while we're talking about mission, it's one of those important things that each of us be able to plug into and understand ourselves in the larger context of Christianity, in the larger context of church, and the larger context of the family, which we call the human family. This is a sermon that His Holiness of Blessed Memory, Catechin I, gave on the feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. And as I said, it's titled, Etchmiadzin is Mission. He says, come, let us make an altar of light, for thereby did the light shine in the land of Armenia. This is from a hymn of the Armenian church. So he quotes this hymn, and then he says, let us focus our attention today on these words, for words which are often repeated tend to lose something of their immediacy and impact on us due to the psychological pressures of repetition. Thus, we often receive, for example, the Lord's Prayer without paying heed to the very meaning of the words being recited. So true, isn't it? Praying where you just pray words? Let us ask ourselves today, what is the altar of life? Do we mean to say that we have to construct an actual altar in the usual sense of the stone and marble table upon which certain ecclesiastical vessels, such as candlesticks and radiating crosses, are placed? Do we mean an actual altar in front of which we are to sense and worship? I would say that what altar of light signifies is nothing but a human being, the dwelling place of light in the human mind and the human heart, and the sphere in which the light is to shine in our life. When the hymn writer suggests that we make an altar of light, he has in mind God himself as the architect of that altar. Same hymn, different understanding. Just like poems, they have different understandings because we have evolved. I'd venture to say that Catechin I of blessed memory, this great Catholicos, had evolved at this point, was understanding a difference from the hymn itself to understanding what that hymn meant in his life and in the life of his people. He says, this is why Etchmiadzin is first and foremost a mission. It is not an institution like other institutions. I should repeat myself. Etchmiadzin is not an ode to the past, a glorification of previous achievements, or pride in former accomplishments. Etchmiadzin is a mission. It is the transcription of God into Armenian, the preaching of Christ's gospel, and the teaching of the faith of our holy fathers. Etchmiadzin was what transmits all of this to our new generations. This is the mystery of Etchmiadzin. It is when you look at this place with the eyes of your spirit that you see it is as it really is, that you see the stones come alive, that you see them cry out, as the gospel says otherwise, for him who looks at them but has no faith, a stone is a stone and nothing but. These stones are actually repositories of our national faith, ideals, spirituality and dedication, and receptacles of the living water of gospel of Jesus Christ coming to us through our fathers and forefathers. It gives a lot to think about. And then he concludes his words. He says, dear brothers and sisters, human response to the divine calling is what is needed now. We have to experience a total and complete change of heart so as to be able to deserve serving at Etchmiadzin, a clergyman and layman in Armenian across the world. As the saying goes, if you own some gold, make it shine and keep dust away from it. God has given us plenty of gold, and it is our responsibility to protect it and let its splendor shine. Etchmiadzin is great power, but not all can see or feel that power. Spiritual alertness is required. You like that? Evolution. Evolving spiritually. Nothing wrong with it. In fact, not only is there nothing wrong with it, it's demanded of us. We need to evolve spiritually. I excerpted from a sermon given by His Holiness, Karagin I. I do notice that on the web it is available as a book, and I'm not sure if the text is available. I'll try to dig up some links and put it on the show notes today so you could check it out as well. Just, he was an incredible man of a lot of vision. His life was a blessing to the Armenian Church. And I wanted to share these thoughts with you as we ponder the entire idea of mission, who we are, what we're doing. And this is the month of mission, October. In a few minutes, I'm going to be heading out to a walk against domestic violence. I want to share that with you as well, just before we conclude for today. Let Susie make her announcements right now.
Susie here again. Before continuing with this broadcast, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there is a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So, we look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that important message about how to get involved. You like what you're hearing. It's always important to share the news. What did he say just now about the gold? You let that gold shine by not letting dust accumulate on it. And so we appreciate all of your prayers, your support, your donations. I want to remind you that this is a mission that is supported through those donations. In a few moments, I'm going to be heading out for a walk. We have our annual walk against domestic domestic violence. This is part of the DOTEV outreach, which we started a couple years ago. This year I had to take a back seat to it. I have to give up some of the reins on DOTEV outreach because of personal projects that I'm involved with, but I'm glad to see that at least these kind of programs continue, at least, at the very least, domestic violence awareness is at the forefront of these efforts. So we're going to be out there walking. It's an 8.8 kilometer walk. Nothing magical about that number, except it happens to be, well, half of 1776. Yeah. The year that the Declaration of Independence was signed, 1776, divided by 2, and you get 8.88. Or you actually get 888, right? Yeah, no point. I guess if you were doing some decimals in there, if you were referring to it as a price tag, $17.76, right? Anyway, if you're totally confused, just divide 1776 by 2 and you get 888. And actually, we are walking an 8.8 kilometer walk. Nothing magical about that number, except it also happens to be the distance between our St. Peter Parish here in Glendale and the Western Diocese St. Leon Cathedral, where we will be received by His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, the primate of this diocese. We're looking forward to get his blessings and then share some thoughts this evening about domestic violence. Sadly, it is a reality that we are dealing with day in and day out. Just a couple days ago, we had another shooting of a husband shooting his wife and then turning the gun on himself. We know that from this most recent trip that we made to Armenia, that the statistics last year, 7 women were killed, and this year, 9 women were killed as a result of domestic violence right in Armenia. Okay? And always somebody comes up to me and they'll ask, are these Armenian? Yes, they are. Yeah, yeah. If that's important. More important than them being Armenians, they are children of God. They are women. And they need the support. They need the protection of all of us. They need for all of us to make a one-voice statement. Violence is never acceptable. That's how simple it is. I think I shared this with you. We were in Armenia with the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, against women being hurt. And we had somebody who said, well, what does the Bible say about this? And here's the simple answer to it. What does the Bible say? Well, what would Jesus do? I mean, who would Jesus beat? Which woman would he beat? Obviously, none. What he would do is he'd extend his arms and he'd say, come to me and relax and know that you're safe. That's a message that for me is in the Bible. That's a Bible message that often doesn't get heard, often doesn't get stated. So we are off to a domestic violence awareness walk here in Los Angeles from Glendale to Burbank. Happens to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We're doing our part. Keep us in your prayers. Well, I think we're going to close it up with that, and I got to get my shoes on and put my arches in the way and get ready to walk. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Remember, you can find us at epostle.net, on Facebook, all over the net. Just do a search. And always spell my name with a Z when you do the searches. It's V-A-Z-K-E-N. You'll make sure that you get the right guy, okay? For the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, via our webman, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.